You bring, in any profession you're in, a distinct gift of who you are. How you treat people is what people remember. And so be a steward of your gifts, because those will bless every experience that you have with every client and every moment in your future profession.
All right, for this episode, we went to Boston, the MGH Institute of Health Professions. I want to thank the faculty and students there for, well, put on a pretty kick-ass show. And this one a little bit different. Theme, interprofessional collaboration. So I have professors from multiple disciplines. So we have PT, OT, SLP, and PA represented. Take a listen. Show's brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for PTs looking for certification in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training and the equipment you need to apply it. Check them out online at owensrecoveryscience.com.
The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
Welcome aboard.
This is the PT Pinecast. Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are in Beantown. I actually had to Google what MGH stood for. I had no idea, but now I do. Massachusetts General Hospital, the Institute of Health Professions. We are doing the live show with the students who are in the house right now. All right, I'm your host, physical therapist Jimmy McKay, and today we're actually going to do something a little bit different. We're going to do a theme. Yes, we've never done this on the show. A theme is going to be interprofessional collaboration. And if you're going to do a theme of interprofessional collaboration, well, you better bring people of other professions on the show. So let's hear it for our first guest, occupational therapist Emily Zeman. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So first question is always the hardest on my show. What's your favorite beer?
I don't drink beer.
Okay. Yeah.
Cider.
Cider? Okay.
I'm gluten-free.
All right. Smart. What do you like?
Citizen cider in Vermont.
Ooh, you're getting all fancy on us. Mm-hmm. All right. So the theme is interprofessional collaboration. So, what's your story? What do you do here at MGH?
I teach in the Impact practice, which is our interprofessional series for students, as well as teach occupational therapy graduate students.
So you're kind of an expert on this.
Maybe.
I'll say it, you didn't. but if you're gonna do a theme of interprofessional collaboration, having someone like you aboard is pretty good. So we'll start from the start, as we always say. What's your background? How'd you come to your current role?
Well, it all started with watching a movie called Pistol Pete.
Okay.
Yep. Pete Maravich at LSU.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And he's got a scene in the movie where he is learning how to play ball and watching his dad coach his team of basketball team in North Carolina and South Carolina. And he stops his players because his players aren't doing what he's expecting them to do in the drill. And he takes the ball and he draws a circle on it, just a small one, and says, "This is what I know about basketball." All right. And he goes, "Here's a dot with a marker. This is what you all know combined." And he said, "The ball represents everything there is to be discovered about the game. And so go out there and figure out that you don't know anything and keep asking questions." And
wow.
It's
yeah.
a great scene. Look
I
it up on
that.
YouTube.
It's kind of how I approach everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that came about to thinking about working with kids. And when I graduated from college, I ended up realizing that I wanted to put off school for a year and did AmeriCorps. And I was housed in a house with five boys from all over the boroughs of New York City in Staten Island. And we played basketball every day on the court that was outside the house. So I kind of brought that story into my work with those kids and got inspired to work with kids who were from circumstances that were at risk or adverse childhood experiences. Wow. And so I came to Boston to go to public health grad school, but my lens was not really refined yet. And so I did some soul searching and had a great advisor. And she said, "I think you would be a good OT." And so I took a semester off and realized, yeah, that's what I want to do. So
you went to grad school for an MPH, Master's in Public Health.
I did.
Going into it, what was your goal?
My goal was to work with people and reduce disparities in populations, and I was mainly interested in working with kids in inner cities based on the circumstances of urban desert, you know, food deserts, and working with children and students who didn't have resources, and because that's what I was working with my AmeriCorps position.
Right.
And I realized, though, I needed that lens of a profession, and so I switched gears. And now, doing research as a faculty member and all the things I get to do, I get to influence those populations.
So you're still getting to look at it from both of those perspectives. I mean, it's funny how, like, you know, things that aren't necessarily something you can get a degree in can still shape how you look at the thing you can get a degree in. And you took that AmeriCorps experience, and you're able to apply that and kind of look through that lens, as we were talking. That's why I kept pointing at Emily before we started, because you get to look through that lens and say, oh, I know how to now apply my skill. But it was a smart advisor who said you needed to have that one singular perspective, and an OT is a great profession to do that as.
Yeah. So now, fortunate.
Now, what else? Describe what you actually get to teach, because the title you gave me sounded real fancy, but explain it to me.
You mean impact?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fancy for everybody here at the Institute.
But we don't know.
So
I
it's
know.
Our interprofessional series. It's a model of coursework that the students take from all different professional disciplines, and they work in teams and get to experience and understand what values-based decision-making is and how to collaborate in teams and engage clients in learning experiences throughout their curricula here. And they're provided real-life health mentors and or simulation experiences, and I get to supervise 3 teams a year.
And so, hold on a second. So who you say they work in teams, the students?
Yes, the students work in student teams.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, like PT schools, see, I do this a lot, like go to schools and do live shows. So like PT schools are all the same, but they're not. Because this, I haven't run across this anyway in any of the schools that I've gone to where it's been kind of done at this level. Because a lot of schools will say, oh, you know what you should do? Collaborate with other professions, but don't actually give you a chance or an opportunity to actually do that. So is it helpful? Just, I mean, blanket question. Is it helpful? Show of hands. It's a podcast. You can't just nod. There you go. He's got me. What do you see the students get out of it? I'm going to kind of ask everybody, I guess, because you guys are all involved in this. I'm talking to the guests that don't have microphones. Smart move. What are some of the great things that you see coming out of it?
I think one of the biggest things is I've been able to work with a volunteer patient 2 years in a row now, and the students are able to go into his house and understand how he lives his day-to-day life and ask questions that also show me what other professions are thinking about when they're evaluating a home and their patient and their caregivers in their home setting. And so each student is learning from each other about their curiosity about the patient, and then that just informs the whole team's understanding of the client's profile and how to best serve them.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. What makes a good OT?
I'd like to think that we talked about this, and I'm going to use actually your words, that you thought that you brought something distinct to being interested in communicating and bringing that to PT versus the other way around. And so I think that OTs are really good at bringing their distinct nature as what they're good at or interested in to the client and transactioning a dynamic that allows for the client to bring out the best in themselves. Yeah. In a meaningful activity.
Okay. And then since you get to work with, you know, students of all disciplines, and since this show is focused on PT, what makes a good PT?
In my experience, the PTs I've always worked with have always been collaborative around what we're each going to work on and how to make sure that we're best serving the client. And so we may co-treat, and I think those co-treats have been some of my best experiences in delivering client care, because we're learning from each other at the same time as giving the client sort of a holistic care client session.
Yeah, it's as Rich mentioned in the opener, I worked in pediatrics in my first year and a half after graduating, and I was one of only 2 PTs in the clinic, and the rest were OTs, and I learned so much from the occupational therapist but they looked at things completely differently. They learned things that I would never brought up in PT school, and it was like magic. It was like someone just like child whispering. I'm like, how did you get that kid to do that? Like, well, and to them it was so easy, but to me it was like magic. So that's fun.
That's great that you think OTs are magic.
They're magical. Plus, like the level of arts and crafts skill was off the charts.
I'd say some of us love the arts and crafts, and some of us call ourselves more of the gross motor OTs, where we kind of prefer doing the obstacle courses and swings and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
what's something a physical therapist or any of the therapy profession should pay attention to when beginning to work with someone from another discipline? What's something you've really got to make sure you do?
I think that ultimately the idea behind asking questions and remaining curious, but when people report in round sessions or talk about a patient, they're actually already telling you what they care about and what lens they're viewing the patient with. And that's both attitude and motivation for that client and caring for them, but also the activities or the goals that they're setting are actually telling you already about the profession. So listen and pay attention and do that active listening, because the clients are going to benefit from the fact that you're listening to the other collaborators on the team.
Yeah, that's a really important lesson. I like that. Let's hear for that. Just clap for that, because it was very smart. Yeah, you can learn a lot from the patient or client or other healthcare provider just by actually listening, not waiting for your turn to talk. There's a difference, hearing something and listening to something and actually trying to do something with that. Instead of, and I'm not going to say this is specific to any of the professions, but sometimes it's, here I am, I'm going to show you what I'm here to show you. Where instead it should be like, what can we get out of this together? And I think that's a good point. Mm-hmm. We have a tradition on the show that we did not prepare you for.
Okay.
So we have a segment on the show we call The Parting Shot.
This is The Parting Shot.
The Parting Shot is brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Their mission, to rehabilitate lives by believing in the strength of people. They believe in their clients and their ability to achieve what they once thought impossible. Optimal function to rehabilitate their lives. Find out more at foxrehab.org.
Parting Shot is a chance for you to give the audience kind of one final sentiment. Like one thing. So the audience here is not just the students of PT in the room, but everybody kind of listening. So what's a parting shot from an occupational therapist that the profession of PT should pay attention to?
Well, I think I'm going to represent myself as well as the profession of occupational therapy. And I think that you bring, in any profession you're in, a distinct gift of who you are. And that therapeutic use of self will bring you farther than any competency in a transfer skill or how you treat people is what people remember. And so be a steward of your gifts, because those will bless every experience that you have with every client in every moment in your future profession.
Love it. Let's hear for that.
This is the PT Pinecast.
The show is brought to you by Arius Medical Staffing. Quite simply, I could talk on and on about Arius, and I do on the show, because they've supported us from the start. But what Arius does is they find you a job wherever you want to go. They've got placements, jobs for PTs in all 50 states. That's how many there are, right? 50? Right. 50 states in all settings. So where do you want to go? Check out where their jobs are. Talk to a recruiter. And again, want to make sure you know, this doesn't cost you, the PT, anything, all right? You just get to go do the thing you want to do, treat patients, where you want to do it, and get paid for it. Arius is just the person to make that happen. AURUSmedical.com. That is where you can find them. Talk to a recruiter there. Paid travel and housing. Benefits go with it. Again, positions in all 50 states. A variety of settings. Go here, try this. Don't like the area? Go somewhere else. Short and long-term assignments. Even Con Ed money. You can travel from position to position or take some time off in between. Listen, you put a lot of work into becoming a physical therapist. Do it on your terms now. Travel the country getting paid to be a PT. AURUSmedical.com.
Let's get back to the show.
Live from MGH, we are doing an episode. The theme is interprofessional collaboration. So we went from OT, now switching over to SLP. Rebecca Inzana, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So what's your story? How did you come to this fine institute of learning?
So the long story? Short story?
I've got a lot of tape. Story. We can go all night. Students are excited. Let's go an hour or two on you. Let's get deep.
So my story is I went to college pre-med and decided after a year and some not so stellar grades that maybe I wanted to rethink that. And so I got this awesome internship at a rehab hospital outside of New York City called Burke Rehabilitation Center. Do you know it?
It's
in Westchester.
Yep.
Awesome,
Plains.
Amazing place. So I got there, and I got there as a last minute, as a freshman, kind of rising sophomore, a last minute like cancellation by a senior. And so I suddenly got to go spend the summer in the dorms on this place, beautiful campus, working with patients. And I didn't know much about it, but it was a sort of a pre-med program, and you can kind of be a nursing assistant and get a feel for what it's like to work in a hospital setting. So we did the introductions and the orientation, and I realized what I was gonna do as a nursing assistant. And then they had this next person come on that talked about vocational rehabilitation and rehab therapy, and that they needed two volunteers. And I raised my hand and asked to go to the bathroom and ran upstairs to their office to be able to do bingo all summer, run bingo and barbecues instead of actually being a nursing assistant, because I didn't love the job description. But being an intern in the vocational or rehab therapy, recreational therapy it was, gave me a chance to work with all of the different patients in this hospital. And there was a floor of TBI patients, a spinal cord injury unit, a cardiac pulmonary rehab, an amputee unit, a stroke unit. It was just phenomenal.
For people who aren't familiar with Berk, it's a really advanced rehab.
Yeah, it's an acute rehab setting.
Yeah, and you're going to see, they also have an outpatient section too, but you're going to see things that if you saw them on a practical in school, you'd be like, this is fake. It'd be like, patient, like, you know, 6 months post-stroke, also gunshot wound, also, you know, amputation. But, like, they see mm-hmm. them there. So I'm familiar with it. I just wanted people to get, like, the kind of, yeah. Somebody's nodding along. We're going to get to that. Yeah. There are patients who are like that.
So as part of this awesome opportunity for students, we had in-services where all the different therapies and departments from across the hospital would come in and talk to us, thinking that we were going to be potentially pursuing some graduate education in the health professions. And one of those fields was speech-language pathology. And it was nothing I'd ever heard of before, but I thought, gosh, this is a really interesting mix between the brain and neurology, which I loved, and language, which is really all I understood about speech at the time. And I loved language, so I had this great summer, went back to Hamilton College, where I went to college, and changed my major to French, and went to live in Paris for a year. And it was fantastic.
Hang on a second. What? I turned around for 1 second. You went to France.
Yes. but I was hooked on this idea of speech pathology. I thought it was really cool. So I finished my liberal arts degree and went to BU as a graduate student and got my master's in speech pathology. And that's really where I learned that swallowing was part of speech pathology, which I never thought about before. And I'm like, I'm never going to do that. That could kill somebody. And now I'm a swallowing specialist at Mass General. From there, I went and worked at an acute rehab hospital here in the area, New England Rehab, and that's where I really learned about interprofessional practice. Like, that was just in it to win it, and really working so closely with the patients and their families, and nursing, and PT, and OT, and respiratory therapy, and I just absolutely loved that. And I had an opportunity to come work at Mass General, and so I've been on the adult inpatient team. Again, primarily swallowing, but communication and cognition as well, here for about 14 years. And about 5 years ago, I came over to the IHP to take a position in the communication sciences and disorders, but I've also become really involved in our interprofessional curriculum.
Yeah. Wow. We went all the way to France on your story and came all the way back.
Yeah.
So what have you taken away with being able to teach in this sort of setting with interprofessional collaboration? Again, it's a term that gets thrown out a lot, especially in PT. But I feel like you guys are really, really doing it.
Yeah, well, I think it's something that you can't teach unless you practice it, because you can't possibly conceptualize what a difference it makes in a patient's outcome and in their stay in the hospital if you don't actually see what it looks like, both the really great examples of it and also the really terrible examples of it. So drawing from my own clinical experience, it's really easy to be passionate about why this is so important. So I also teach in the impact practice curriculum, and then I run the interprofessional dedicated education units at Mass General. So I think some of you, I've seen some familiar faces here. Some of you have come to the hospital and spent two mornings a week actually on the floors, and we train the clinicians there, so the SLPs, PTs, OTs, and nurses, how to be interprofessional practice instructors. So the students are spending the morning with them, actually seeing their patients on the floors, seeing, you know, it's not a rose-tinted experience by any means. Like, it's real life, and you see awesome situations, you see balls dropped and, you know, scrambling to kind of figure out what to do after that, and it's a really great way to bring to life a lot of the stuff that we teach in class.
You said a second ago that it would be very difficult to teach it unless you were actually practicing it. Yeah. And then you went to, you know, you've seen some great examples and some crappy examples of it. I want one of each.
Ooh.
What's it look like at a great scenario?
I feel like I need to talk to MGH risk management.
No, we'll just... We will edit out any HIPAA sort of violations in post-production. But like, what does it look like when the team is really singing? Like, when it's really good, you know... But
so
it works.
When the team works really well, and I'm going to qualify team by each patient is not going to have the same team members, right? Everyone has their own needs, and you know, I think recognizing that there are specialists that need to be brought on to pretty much any case is important, but it's not always going to be the same mix. So the best scenario is going to be when all the right people are there, they're all communicating, they all understand what each other do and or does and what they're bringing to the table, that they're approachable, that the patient and the family and the team are all on the same page because they've all had the appropriate discussions at the appropriate times, and that the outcome is the best it can be.
Okay, so I won't ask for an exact, you know, bad example, but what breaks down when there is a situation that doesn't work?
Oh gosh, I mean, well, you know, I'll say there's some sort of crazy statistic that talks about how about 90% of sentinel events, so event where that leads to a death or near death, is due to a communication failure. So, you know, I think that right there, and I think many of us who are practicing have seen that, if not, you know, hopefully not a sentinel, but what we call a near miss, where it's like, oh gosh, thank God that didn't happen, or something got caught beforehand, you know, and it's terrifying. And you feel for the patient, but you also just feel like you've failed them because your team hasn't worked together. And there can be a lot of finger pointing, but that's not the point. It's trying to fix the system and
right. And
knowing that we have to get a lot better at this.
And look at that. It was a community. It wasn't what you were doing or what you knew or what you didn't know.
Mm-hmm. No,
you're not
sharing it with the people that need to know.
Caring is sharing.
Sure.
Focus
is.
On that. No. Suddenly the guy with the communications degree looks like he's in the right spot. Yeah. I feel good about that one. you tweeted at me earlier an article, and I didn't read it. Because
okay.
Rich and I were, but I like
to find the,
I like
the audio. Maybe I'll read it and record it and then send it to you.
But why did you tweet that at me? What was the big? I love the title and I knew where you were going with it, but
yeah,
I wanted you to bring
so
that
it's,
up.
And many of you guys may have had experience with this or might in Impact One if you haven't gotten there yet. But it's Atul Gawande or Gawande. Mm-hmm. I always forget how you say it. What's that? Gawande, yeah. His article on cowboys and pit crews, which actually I believe started as a commencement address to Harvard Medical School back in, I think, 2011. And it's a wonderfully written, if you ever read any of his stuff, he's a phenomenal writer, but it's this wonderfully written plea to get people to change how they think about healthcare. And that once upon a time, it could be one-stop shopping, that you could go to your physician and they could have an answer to whatever ailed you or an answer as close as they could get, and you get your treatment and you go on your way or you don't make it or what have you. But now there's so many things that we've discovered over time that could go wrong with you, and so many new procedures and that require so many specialists, so many treatments and so forth, that it's really unrealistic to think of this sort of cowboy model, and rather we need to change our thought about healthcare into more of a pit crew, where people have specialties, and that if you're functioning really, really well and you're communicating with one another, you're gonna be able to get that race car out really quickly and get that driver, aka patient, back on the road as quickly as possible. But if you've got one person trying to do all that stuff, nobody wins. But unfortunately, our system is such that we're not, at this point, our physicians are not rewarded for being part of a team. They're still rewarded for being one person who shows up to kind of run the show. Yeah. So how do we need to change that?
Well, that's a system issue, right?
Yep.
Yeah. The system is in place where, you know, playing well in the sandbox might not be, you know, rewarded, as you said.
Right.
I do like the picture of the pit crew, because there was always that time, you know, on ESPN with the tire rolling down the runway. That's not always great. So you ready for your parting shot?
Absolutely.
So parting shot. So since you're a speech-language pathologist, mm-hmm. You know, what's one sentiment the profession of PT should pay attention to?
All right. Well, I'm going to do it with regard to our relationship between speech and PT. I think I would say remember two things. One is that the field of speech-language pathology is so broad. So many of you may be familiar with SLPs working in schools or working on, you know, people working on accent reduction or on working on aphasia or communication or augmentative communication or swallowing. So, you know, as you have a patient, think about how can I collaborate with a speech language pathologist? Could this patient benefit from communication, cognitive therapy? What can we do together to help that patient?
Yeah, I like that. You should clap.
And the second one is
oh, you got a second one? Do the second one, I'll make him clap again.
All right. I've had Achilles tendonitis since February, so if anybody can help me, call me.
We got you.
I love you.
Tara Rebecca.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
Like craft beer for your ears.
This is the PT Pinecast.
Hey guys, the Movement Maestro here, letting you know that Rock Tape is so much more than just a tape company. We are a movement company. Move stronger, longer with the world's best kinesiology tape, topical pain relief, mobility equipment, and protective gear. But that's not all. Learn from the best with our industry-leading continuing education courses. Want 20% off your first product purchase? Head on over to shop.rocktape.com and use the code PTPINECAST. Again, for the folks in the back, that's shop.rocktape.com and enter the code PTPINECAST. Rock Tape, the world's best kinesiology tape, the movement industry's new standard for education.
And we're back. Let's get back to the show.
All right, MGH, we are doing the live show here, interprofessional collaboration with OT, then SLP, and now PA, physician assistant. Josh, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Josh, what's your role here at MGH?
Now, I'm just recently promoted. I'm assistant professor. I teach essentially across PA studies, a number of different courses within cardiology, pulmonology. I just finished dermatology. But my true love within the department really is teaching medical simulation. Is really my focus and my
That's
love
cool.
that I really fell in love with, yeah.
Describe that, because I've never really done much medical simulation.
Yeah,
recently.
Number of things medical simulation. You could do with standardized patients, but I really love using mannequins only because of the control aspects that I have complete control over what the mannequin
does.
Oh,
like those robotic patients?
The robotic patients.
All right.
They could do absolutely anything.
Give me some examples.
Like one of them that I'll do in the fall is we have the patients essentially having a heart attack.
Yeah.
If you're a myocardial infarction, and if the students give, let's say, nitro or morphine with an inferior MI, we drop their pressure. And theoretically, they could go into cardiac arrest, but for the most part, we're not that mean.
Yeah, suddenly a gait practical doesn't seem so bad, right? Yeah. So the theme of the episode today is interprofessional collaboration and how we work as a team. We talked to a couple other providers outside of PT. How do we play well in the sandbox with PAs? How's your relationship? I feel like I'm Dr. Phil. How's your relationship with physical therapists, Josh?
I think I'm a little bit different than a lot of the other professions represented here tonight, just because I'm not part of the rehab discipline. And I feel like I work in the emergency room clinical practice, and we do actually work with speech language, physical therapy, occupational therapy a lot. But it's not often in the acute phase. A lot of times it's with an observation that we're calling in a consult. So it's a little bit different relationship, at least in the clinical practice, at least.
You just mentioned calling in a consult. Give me an example of like good communication when that happens. Because I'm imagining in the ED, you don't have a lot of time. I mean, you've got robots to give heart attacks to, so you don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, so a good consult there.
Or just strategies for communicating well both ways.
Unfortunately, as we talked about before, with what Rebecca was talking about is the way the system is let up. You page the physical therapist. You wait for them to come down, give them a quick liner of what you're really looking for, and a lot of times that is really it, which is quite unfortunate. But a lot of times, that's in the emergency departments, but when the patient's in observational inpatient floor, there is that opportunity for both sides to actually see the patient together, round on the patient together, and that would be the optimal thing that happens when time allows.
Yeah. So what are the other routes of communication? You know, what other touch points do you have? I know yours are limited when compared to the others, but you know, what would be a good way? I mean, I'm imagining notes. I'm imagining things that you're able to read if that patient were to come back to you.
Yes. Well, I will say the worst forms are only written documentation.
Yeah.
So often, like, oh, just read my note. So you end up waiting 30, 45 minutes for that other specialty provider for their notes to be done to figure out what their recommendations are. And I feel as though that really drops a lot of the sentiment of oral communication. It limits the questions that the other side can actually ask.
Yeah.
So the optimal way would truly, when this does happen, it's great, and both sides learn a lot, is when the patients are, when they're seen together. When the physical therapist and the PA, nurse practitioner, MD, when you're in the room at the same time. And that's really when I see the best patient care, and essentially you'll see the best results for the patients, the best resources are identified to actually be sure this patient is able to get better.
Yeah, EHR is not really a page turner.
Not really.
Are you able to work on the teams they alluded to earlier with PT students? Do you get to see PT students much in what you do?
I, unfortunately, in the emergency department, I don't get to work with a lot of PT students, unfortunately.
But we did a couple episodes of PT in the emergency department, really a kind of an emerging area of the profession, something that when I came across it, I was kind of completely stunned that it actually does exist. How frequently are you calling in a consultation or being able to utilize a PT in the ED?
So it happens fairly frequently, actually. Any patient that we could use them more, any patient that is a fall risk at home, any patient that has any musculoskeletal complaints. So I'll say my other clinical role is I work with Crimson Care Collaborative, which is a faculty student clinic run between MGH Stokel Center, Harvard Medical School, MGH Institute, where we have the opportunity to have all these different disciplines student run in the same exact room. So there's no reason why, especially even in the emergency departments, urgent care, family medicine setting, someone comes in with a medical, like musculoskeletal complaints, why can't an allied profession see that first? Why does it have to be the MD? Why does it have to be the PA doing that? Why can't you see the patient together? Just have one do the initial exam. You can actually learn a lot.
From your mouth to God's ears, that's all I'm saying, right? So why wasn't it always that way? I feel like it's trending that way now. Why wasn't it always that way? And how do we speed it up? Come on.
So I think it's getting there. I think part of it was there was no one was curious. No one really asked those questions. And now we're actually seeing a lot of the professional societies actually putting into professional practice into their credentialing standards for schools and for a high-level professional practice for good patient outcomes. So now that someone else is mandating it, the higher levels are really saying, this is really what good patient care is. We're seeing everyone else starting to ask those questions. And
there's
really
that PIC crew model we were just talking about. What should physical therapists know about physician's assistants? I feel like I want to make sure we actually know what lens you're looking at your day through.
Essentially with PAs, yeah, there's no apostrophe S. We're trying to eliminate that because there's no plurality or ownership. What PAs are really meant to be a part of the medical team working in collaboration with, essentially it's supposed to be the supervising MD, but you could take the broader aspect of it and working in collaboration with the rest of the medical team. So I think our profession truly is, by definition, an interprofessional profession because of our requirement to work with with our supervising or collaborating MD.
So what else should PTs know besides where to not put the apostrophe? Yeah. That's my fault. Sorry. My bad.
That we do play nice in the sandbox.
Yeah.
That we really are part of the medical team. We're able to provide great care and great access, and really just ask questions.
Yeah, you mentioned that sandbox. I really do think, we brought it up earlier, I think it's more of a system issue, because most of the time when you talk to medical professionals, they really are there for people. That sole reason, for that, you know, that people reason. I think it takes some effort to navigate around systems who aren't necessarily set up for that to make better sandcastles, just to go on your sandbox analogy right there. You ready for your parting shot?
Sure.
This is The Parting Shot.
The Parting Shot is brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Their mission, to rehabilitate lives by believing in the strength of people. They believe in their clients and their ability to achieve what they once thought impossible. Optimal function to rehabilitate their lives. Find out more at foxrehab.org.
I say the parting shot, really, you guys are students, but you're going to be providers. I know Center for Medical Simulation with debriefing used a lot about the term with get curious, but really continue to ask those questions, and pretty soon you're going to have that ability to make a difference, to make these changes, be able to communicate well, not just with your patients, not just with other people in your field, but with everyone else in the healthcare team. And I think it's going to be really important for the next generation of healthcare.
All right, it's here for Josh, everybody.
Love the PT Pinecast?
Yes, yes.
Support the show by telling a friend or by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play. This is the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
Our home on the internet. ptpinecast.com. Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs. From website development and hosting to providing content marketing solutions for PT clinics across the country. See what Build PT can do for you today at buildpt.com. PT Pinecast supports Go Baby Go, a national community-based research, design, and outreach program that provides modified ride-on cars to children birth to age 3 who experience limited mobility. Founded by Cole Galloway from the University of Delaware. For more information about how you can build your own cars or start your own chapter, visit udel.edu/gobabygo.